Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Scott McCormick and R.H. Lazelle. Friends, comic creators, cat people. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 262 of the podcast with Scott McCormick and R.H. Lazelle, author and illustrator team behind the Mr. Pants graphic novel series. These books are ridiculous, and I rarely find myself in laughing aloud as much as when I'm reading a Mr. Pants comic. Mr. Pants Book 4, Camping Catastrophe, is the newest installment in the series, but as you'll hear, nothing's off the table in this conversation about kids, cats, comics, and cracking one another up. Enjoy the listen. Here's episode number 262 of the podcast with Scott McCormick and R.H. Lazelle. Welcome to the podcast, Scott McCormick, Bob Lazelle. I'm excited to have you both here.
We're super excited to be here.
Thanks for having us, Matthew.
Thank you both for creating Mr. Pants. As I was saying before recording, this is one of my favorite comics, and it's definitely one of my students' favorite comics. So you both are heroes in my eyes for that.
That's awesome.
That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got crazy comic about ridiculous cats that, to me, it always defies my sense of wonder and curiosity and awe when people can write things that are funny, or that maybe I should say that are still funny despite me knowing that it must have gone through a ton of edits. And yet, you're writing stuff that my students and I, it's like watching favorite moments of cartoons that we rehash and be like, remember when that part happened? That's a thing that happens with your books. That is rad.
That's awesome to hear. I always wonder about that with movies. Like, I watch a comedy movie and I'm thinking like, wow, somebody had to write that, and then it got rewritten, you know, 10,000 times, and then somebody had to act it, and they had to do, you know, several takes, and then it got edited, and like, how does it still remain funny? I don't know. It's kind of a big mystery.
Well, whatever your mystery trick is, I'm glad it works.
Me too.
Hey, so tell me, you've got a new Mr. Pants out. I have read and enjoyed the first three Mr. Pants, which, in order, I suppose, it's the first one is Mr. Pants, it's Go Time, right?
Right.
Yeah, and then we go into Slacks Camera Action, and the newest one I've read is Trick or Feet. But you've got a fourth coming out probably by the time this posts, Camping Catastrophe.
Yep.
Yes, sir.
Do you mind giving either one sort of a summary of what this comic is all about, and then maybe give us a little peek into what happens in Camping Catastrophe?
So let's see, the Pants and Foot Foot come home from school. and they're super excited. Someone visited their school that day from like a scouting type organization, and they just want to become, they're called Rugged Rangers, and they want to be Rugged Rangers super bad. They want to do all the fun things that you get to do as a Rugged Ranger. Mr. Pants especially wants to do like knives and archery and all that kind of stuff. And then, you know, then they start running into problems because the Rugged Rangers only take boys. So Foot, who's like super into camping and all that stuff, technically she's not joining the Rugged Rangers. And Mr. Pants, even though he thinks he's really into all that stuff, he really isn't into the outdoors. He doesn't like to be dirty. He doesn't like bugs. So that's the basic premise of the book. How do they navigate that desire? you know, against the rules and against what Mr. Pants like really likes.
You know, it's funny. I just finished all this in February, and I've forgotten most of all.
I was going to say, it's funny. I'm just hearing this story for the first time.
That did happen. You know, I spent 6 months with it.
Well, so Bob, you draw the panels. I mean, I can imagine it must be so easy to kind of get lost in like the details of.
Yeah, from day to day, I lose the overview.
The story.
Yeah. So. That's what you were talking about. I was like, oh, yeah, that did happen.
When you, Bob, receive the manuscript from Scott, or maybe I should just ask what your writing process is, because, well, Scott, you shared with me earlier that you've actually known each other for a while. It's not as if the publisher paired you both up, but it sounds like you came in together with Mr. Pants to Dial.
We bucked convention, I think, when I was I wrote a story. It was called The Other Side of the Story, and it was like a flip book. So you read Mr. Pants's version of a story. He's trying to grab a toy soldier, and then he gets into a fight with his sister Foot, and they break the soldier, and they cry out for mom. And then you read the same version of events from Foot's perspective, and you literally would flip the book upside down, so it's like two books in one. And yeah. So I had this manuscript, and I thought it was really cool, but I thought it was like 200 words. I mean, the whole thing would have fit on one piece of paper. And I thought, there's no way I'm going to get a publishing deal with this. Like, it's hard to explain to people. You have to see it.
Yeah.
So I figured, well, you know, even though they tell you don't get it illustrated ahead of time, I was like, I have to do it. And so I asked a friend of mine, Nicole Klein, I'll give her a shout out. I said, hey, Nicole, who do we know that illustrates, that does illustration? And she said, Bob does. And Bob and I were working together and had known each other for, I don't know, at least 10 years at that point.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, even before Mr. Pants, we would be hanging out and going to movies and just hanging out with a bunch of people. So
we recorded some music together.
That's true.
Yeah, with Bunny Plasma.
Right. See, I forgot that too.
He's had a long day.
So, yeah, Scott and we already came into this kind of being friends and working off each other, and we kind of like the same, you know, type of movies and music and all that stuff. So, Mr. Pants works because we kind of work together.
So when you're going at writing a new book, Scott, is your process collaborative, or do you tend to write out the manuscript and then hand it off to Bob, and then sort of edits go back and forth from there?
Well, yeah. So I will write it. And every book has kind of been different, so yeah. I don't have like a single process. But I guess like the last couple was me coming up with an overarching story and pitching it to my editor at Dial Books and getting the that sounds great, and then just sitting down and just trying to write a whole bunch of stories and try to, you know, like on the one hand you want to write the overall story, so Mr. Pants wanting to become a Rugged Ranger. But on the other hand, you want to write individual chapters of just like random funny things. And so then I'll just finish the manuscript and I'll give it to my editor and we will work together until it's, you know, as good as we can make it. And at that point we bring Bob in, and then I don't know really what the process is from that point.
I just read the script and I kind of just visualize what is happening. And then I break it down and make thumbnails. And from the thumbnails, I have to pass it back to
the publisher, and they say yay or nay, and maybe you know, change some of this, fix that, and then I just go ahead and do finished digital art from there.
Do you, Scott, when you write, do you write it out like a like a play manuscript? Am I seeing it like that? Like, how do you, I don't know how into detail. I know talking to different cartoonists, even someone like Nathan Hale, who writes and illustrates, still does like a full, like a full manuscript that way, with different characters talking, which denote different narrations or speech bubbles or something like that. I didn't know to what extent you are dictating any of the way that the actions will be portrayed in the art, even if you have a panel or a beat that doesn't have any words with it.
Right. Oh, so yeah. So the format that I use for the manuscript is like a screenplay, which is
screenplay. Started... Where is my words? I can't find my words tonight. You know that thing with the play where they write it.
Screens. So that I used before writing children's books. I tried my hand at writing screenplays, and the thing that appealed to me about taking a comic book approach was that I could just focus on dialogue and not focus on, you know, he looked at her longingly and all that nonsense. So I read it as a screenplay. And then in terms of like saying what goes in there, I try to say as little as possible. I try to take the Shakespeare approach and just leave as much of it, give Bob as much room as possible to do what he wants.
Yeah.
And I think to varying degrees of success, like sometimes you just have to say like, hey, they're in the middle of the woods and, you know, he has a big backpack on him. But I try to like, you know, give him as much room as possible. But there was one book, I think it was the Trick or Feet, right?
Mm-hmm.
You were under like a really short deadline and you were like, don't give me any room. Just tell me what you want to see. I don't have time to be creative.
Yeah. Basically. Just tell me what you want to see.
And I thought I was like doing my fear. I'm like, dude, you can really stretch out. You can do whatever you want. And he's like, I don't have time for that. Just what do you want? Just tell me.
Yeah.
That's unfortunately. Amazing.
But it did. What I love, the fact that I'm not like, I don't do the writing and the illustration, like, because I never know what I'm going to see. And Bob and I have a similar sense of humor, and he will often throw visual jokes in there that never even occurred to me. In fact, I'd even be thinking like, this part of the story is getting a little slow, and he must pick up on that because he will inject some visual little thing, and it will just crack me up. Some of the facial expressions he gives the cats just amazing, and it's not anything that I could possibly put into words.
That stuff has always been funny to me, and I'm just pulling from growing up watching a lot of like Bugs Bunny cartoons, like when they would just look at the camera and just make a weird face like, oh, this is happening. Something's happening, and now I'm breaking the fourth wall. And
right.
So much with the eyes in these series, where there's a couple moments, like you're saying with the breaking the fourth wall, where any one of the characters looks out to us and just sort of goes like, do you believe this? Do you believe this is happening? Right. Like even some of the characters themselves are like fed up with being in their own story with these other characters.
Yes. You nailed it.
I love it. Oh, let me go back. Bob, let me spend some time with you with this art, because this is, your art doesn't look like other art, and I really like that. It's very, for lack of better words, I know that you come from graphic design, it looks very graphic in that way. It looks just, I don't know, it's just like interesting to look at. There's these big round figures with a thick line, and I don't know, the expressions are just ridiculous, and it looks to me like something that, it looks like a cartoon. Like this book, maybe I keep coming back to that, more than almost anything else I've read, just feels like I'm watching a cartoon.
Well, yeah, and I spent some time, I went to school for animation as well, and I love cartoons, and going into Mr. Pants, I thought, well, let's make this as easy as possible for everyone, and let's just make it look like a cartoon already.
Yeah.
So, I just went really basic with it. I mean, I love simplicity, I love shapes, and you can say a lot with less sometimes.
Yeah, the colors are so they're blocked so well. And I mean, for Pete's sake, Grommy, the youngest cat, looks like a ghost from Pac-Man. I love it. It's just things like that that I just, there are the way you've designed your characters are just, they make it very easy to keep the different characters separate, because their personalities themselves, I feel like, are poured into their design.
Right. Well, but thank you for saying that. I was concerned. And I've noticed that too. Like, oh, well, what I'm doing is not what everyone else is doing. And I didn't know if people would be attracted to that or not.
Well, I got two comments on that. First, I feel like the art feels like it's created with the audience that's intended for. It looks like it's made to appeal to kids, and it does.
Right.
It just looks fun and ridiculous. Yeah. And where I harken back to that, my point too, is that when I look at this book, it reminds me of the first time I ever saw South Park. And I was like, what am I looking at?
Right.
But
right.
The more you watch it, the more you realize there's so much going on in these basic shapes, these round and rectangular shapes, that to me shows a lot of restraint as an artist, but also then it shows off a lot of your skill for being able to communicate, as we say, as much as you're saying in their expressions through these simple shapes. Yeah. And then for me, I mean, also you think about South Park, one of the greatest things about that is how easy it was for all of us then to replicate it and make stories of our own. And that I come back all the time as a teacher to that ability for kids to be able to replicate your stories and be part of your stories and draw your characters and do that the way that so many of us grew up drawing Snoopy, which is another very famously simple shape that just,
we're both big Peanuts fans.
There you go.
That's probably at the heart of a lot of
yeah both Scott and I are Peanuts fans, so I guess the simplicity of that, the drawings and but you know, we were talking about that earlier, there's a much more deeper statement sometimes with Peanuts,
right?
But
I read somewhere, I think it was Mo Willems was saying that he wants all of his creations to be something that kids can draw, because he loved being able to do that. And I don't think Bob and I ever verbalized that, but I think like Bob picked up on that right away. Like he knew that was important.
I would believe that. And I think that it is important. And I, not that you need to hear it from me, but I want to affirm that I love your art. I think it's perfect for this. Also, Scott, if we can talk for a moment about Trick or Feet, you created this game out of zombies eating brains that turned into like the greatest thing around my household, because instead of eating brains, because mom was like, that's not, we have this thing, so we have a 5-year-old at our house, and there are things that mom notices right away are not appropriate, even though I don't seem to think that it's bad for us to pretend like we have guns in our hands, that is not okay. So you take mommy saying no brains, we're not eating brains, and so it turns into grains, and the first thing they run around with, Grommy runs around with, is saying quinoa.
It's pretty genius.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's
one funnier word than quinoa. I don't know.
Yeah,
it's about as funny as they get. Rutabaga, that's another, it's not a grain, but it's something with like basic vegetables and grains. They're just funny.
No, and then there's something else even like later in there where the other characters that are playing zombie tag in this airport start calling out other things. And where is it? Oh, yeah, here, where it's amaranth. And the character's like, it's a grain. Fair enough. I should say that the most recent book that I wrote, Trick or Feet, is about so there's these three cats and a mom. And they're going to Mr. Pants is excited about trick-or-treating and about playing the zombie tag game, because you can win, the winner will win 10-pound bag of candy. But they make a sudden plans to go visit family, but there's a freak snowstorm that holds them up in an airport, and the cats still want to trick-or-treat, and so they are forced to figure out a way to still have fun in the airport, and which also includes trying to trick mom to fall asleep by reading a boring book. I feel like, man, these authors know parents so well.
what was the name of the book that she was reading? Did you name it? Because I thought
it was like some rocket science.
Oh, right.
I think it's called
It is Rocket Science.
Yes. It is rocket science.
And I found some like NASA text about like the Saturn V rocket, and I was like, oh man, I'm like falling asleep with like in 10 words into the sentence. I need to like take this and modify it and just run with it because this is so drab. And yet it's about a rocket. Like, how do they make that sound boring? And they did.
And they did. Good job, guys.
Thanks, NASA.
Well, I like what you're doing here with the series, and you have book four is coming out. Are you signed up to do more than that? Is there a foreseeable end to this series, or do we get to just keep enjoying it for a while?
Hopefully we will keep enjoying Mr. Pants books until you're like wishing that we would stop making Mr. Pants books. I want to be like the Simpsons of the It's like, okay.
You thought you wanted out, but then you love season 10, guys. Right. Come on. So we're going to give you 5 more. Well, that's good. Well, I'm glad that you've got you're rolling out about one a year then, right?
Yeah.
Good. Well, good that it's able to keep up and that it has the feel that it does. It has a strong feel of in the design too, and in the pacing of like a web comic to me, which I think is a cool feel too, and also something that I think we're seeing more and more kids starting to read more web comics, which is great. But yeah,
we've been getting a lot of feedback from kids or from parents saying that their kids read this book, and their kids, you know, never read books, but they love Mr. Pan. And I just think like the graphic novel format, I know it's like kind of exploding now, but I think it's about time. You know, it's just such an easy way for kids to get into reading, and it doesn't feel like reading. You know, next thing they know, they've spent an hour with this book, and you know, they're not been playing video games. They haven't been playing outside. Bob and I are just huge fans of the whole graphic novel genre. It's just so much fun.
Well, and especially that they're books that can be read over and over and are read over and over. As a librarian, I see the books checked out not just one time, but they're read, you know, several times because they're so easy for kids to come back to and reread.
Yeah, and you can jump in at any point,
right? Exactly. Do you, in the times that you've been visiting schools, because you've had these books out for a couple of years now, have you, I don't have any doubt that you've encountered a ton of kids that love your stuff. Have you had any of those opportunities to talk to parents, though? Do you have parents that are skeptical? Would they be that straightforward with you as an author? Would they be straightforward enough to question your writing, though? Maybe not.
You mean like about the genre?
I mean, are they ever like, oh, great, you wrote a comic, but are you going to write something else a little bit meatier for my children to read?
Oh, no, not at all.
Actually, good, like, thank God.
Totally, I think that like that whole bias against graphic novels is kind of behind it. I mean, you might have a better sense than I do, but I haven't gotten any pushback at all. People are down with it.
I think that it's there's still something there, because when the generation of parents that are, you know, these kids now, their parents are, you know, my age, and we grew up when the X-Men TV show was starting and things like that, the animated series, but it was still a time when it was comic books. Graphic novels weren't sort of the thing that we have now. And so I think they still might be just a little slightly misunderstood, but the advantage the kids now have going for them is that there's a ton of book festivals, and authors are getting out and visiting schools and are, you know, at your local bookstore or Skyping with you or all that. So I think that it's actually, it's so much easier to know the people behind the books and the,
right. And
I don't know. It's just a different world to be living in for them now.
Well, and also, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I feel like also the big publishers are putting out the graphic novels as opposed to just comics book.
That's true.
Companies.
It's not just Marvel publishing or Image publishing. Now it's actually books that are reviewed and in libraries
and
in winning awards and in Scholastic book order forms. Yeah. It's a good time for comics.
Yeah.
This is nice. You came up doing comics like when the boom really started happening. That's rad.
It's been fun.
Because the other hard part about comics is that your readers do read them in an hour, and then they're like, what next?
Yeah, we've had that experience.
It's going to take me another year, guys.
So funny, because I handed this book to an adult, a friend of mine, and she read it in, I think, 15 minutes. And I was like, oh my God, that took us so long. You just read it in 15 minutes. But luckily, kids don't read that fast.
That's right.
But again, they can go back to it.
That's right.
Have you had... Have you had any pitches from kids that ended up making it into your stories, or that you've considered or that have influenced you in some way?
My kids have suggested things that have eventually turned into stories. Yeah, that was really good English, Scott. yeah, I don't know that I can like make a one-to-one connection. Like someone said, but one time when the first Avengers movie was coming out, my kids said, "Hey, Mr. Pants should be one of the Avengers." And then I wrote a story that hasn't made it into a book yet, but like he and his siblings pretend to be superheroes. But that was about the only time where it was like a direct.
It was so direct, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna pay royalties to my son. Nah, I can't think of another instance where it was like somebody said something and then I went and did it. Usually it kind of morphs into something and then morphs it again.
Yeah.
And I don't know where the ideas come from. So it's, yeah, who knows.
That's your kids are funny, though. Your kids are funny.
My kids are funnier than me.
Funnier than you? Is that what you said? Is it just that are you like a great, ridiculous dad? Are you a dad jokes kind of dad?
What do you mean by dad jokes kind of dad?
Oh, I mean, like, are you...
Dad jokes is kind of a thing. It's like this...
Oh, see, I don't know.
I realize now that my dad raised me on telling these groaner-type jokes that now I end up saying all the time to my own students. And I think
it's like bad puns or something.
Yeah. But I think it sort of allows them to understand each other through humor and know that it's like, I don't know. I like it.
It's a gateway to bigger things.
I guess I realize that I'm telling dad jokes all the time and I'm okay with that. But I know that when I say like the kids are being ridiculous, I'm like, well, like I feed them on dad jokes. So
yeah.
Yeah, my kids are constantly saying things. There's a lot of sarcasm and just like it's just like humor. Everything's viewed through humor, and it's not totally me. My wife's very funny too, but yeah, like my kids will say things. I'll be like, "Wow, that totally is all my fault that they're saying."
Yes, I've created these monsters. That's awesome. Hey, where did the name Mr. Pants come from? Do you have you have a cat though? I mean, I don't assume your cat's name is Mr. Pants, but it's a fun name. Speaking of ridiculousness.
Yeah, so we had, unfortunately, a cat named Mr. Pants, and he was a real crazy, wacky cat, and that's kind of like was the genesis of the whole thing. And when we were trying to name him, I think someone said that they had recently seen like a racehorse named Mr. Pants or something, and I was like, that's it, that's the name,
yes. It's Mr. Pants.
And then, you know, it was always going to be Mr. Pants when I was writing the stories because of this cat. And it's just such a great name. And I feel like the name is half the battle. If you have a great name.
Oh, yeah. I would agree. And I like the way you're saying, too, and I see this as this happens with writers, that there's just some ideas and some names that just won't leave you alone. And that's how you know that I have to write this. It just won't get out of my head.
And Foot Foot comes from a Shags song called My Pal Foot Foot. And it's just always, it's one of the greatest bad songs of all time. And it's just a name that has always stuck with me, Footfoot. I just loved it, and I had a cat named Footfoot, and I had to name one of my characters Footfoot, because how can you not?
How can you not? Yeah. Oh, man. Sounds like you are pulling from lots of fun places.
Crazy. Yeah.
Well, it's whatever you're doing, whatever you've got working, whatever crazy you got going on, both of you, as busy as you are and as silly your children are and the influences they have, you're coming up with amazing comics that are hilarious to read, and I can't thank you enough for making readers out of some of our reluctant kids, as well as just having something that a kid can just pick up and read and smile over. That's great.
Well, thank you for saying that.
Thanks,
never gets old hearing that.
Ran. Well, speaking of those children, I'm going to leave you each with the final word here. As I get ready to go back to see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Scott, why don't I start with you, and then Bob will end with you. What message would you like for me to bring to them from you?
Buy low, sell high. You can never hear that too early in life. It's something that I think you just can't drill into kids often enough.
Uh-huh. All right, Bob. You're up, man.
Well, you know, keep reading and make friends with creative people and be friends with them a long time, because you never know what's going to happen.
This podcast is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland. You can subscribe to the podcast and access the archive of over 250 episodes at All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton, a semi-weekly podcast about picture books and the people who make them. Our theme music is by Emily Arrow. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if the episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook and Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that's a very good thing indeed. Coming up on the podcast, Kate DiCamillo returns to talk about summer reading. And after that, Jersey Drozd joins me to talk about Boulder and Fleet, his webcomic, and A2CAF, a kids' comics convention in Ann Arbor, Michigan. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumor has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favorite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.